From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The scholar Kyle Bishop says zombies matter. Just think about that for a minute, and it seems absurd. I mean, these are movie and TV monsters, and yes, they're all the rage right now, and they're scary and cool and fun, but really, they matter? Well, Bishop studies zombies, I guess I could put it that way. That is, how they manifest themselves in popular culture. And zombies are popular for important reasons, he says. They tell us something about the things we're worried about, like losing our freedom or a global pandemic, even being too much a part of the crowd. And look at all the different zombies in TVs and movies over time, and you can see how they can be tailored to almost any situation. Kyle Bishop is joining us today to talk about zombies. And if that wasn't enough, here's one more tease. Zombies were real. Join us after the news.
So we never realized it until two listeners, Amy Fowler and Mitchell Rickey, made their own. It's a mug with Doug on it. It's Mug Fabrizio. Show your love for Doug and the Radio West crew, and we'll thank you with this handsome fella on your doorstep. Visit KUER.org and make your donation today.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. If you're a movie monster, the competition is rough and you're going to have to bring your A game. Vampires have been doing pretty well lately, but mummies and werewolves, not so much. The most popular monster right now in popular culture is, wait for it, zombies, the undead. And they're everywhere. Movies and TV shows and video games, children's books, action figures. And here's the reason they seem to be sticking around. Adaptation. The scholar Kyle Bishop says over the years, the zombie has managed to evolve and mature. You're worried about the communists? There's a zombie for that. You're worried about nuclear annihilation? There's a zombie for that. Worried about a devastating global pandemic or terrorism or mindless consumerism? Zombies have been designed to help you work out all of those fears. So think of it this way. Zombies are useful. As Bishop puts it in his new book, Zombies Can Help Us Understand the Perplexing World Around Us. Today in the program, we're talking about zombies. Kyle Bishop is joining us to take us through all of this. Bishop is an associate professor of English at Southern Utah University, where he also directs the honors program there. He's the author of American Zombie Gothic, and his new book is How Zombies Conquered Popular Culture. And he's joining us today from his office there at Southern Utah University in Cedar City. And Professor Bishop, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks, Doug. I'm very excited to be on the show. It's a timely topic at the right time of year.
Absolutely. Well, I guess we have to start with what it is that got you thinking first about zombies. Like, when did you – like, were you always a fan when you were a kid?
No, actually. I was raised a little bit on Hitchcock, but I wasn't really a fan of horror films when I was young. It wasn't until I got into college that I started watching horror films. And frankly, I was somewhat underwhelmed by zombie movies when I was at that stage. It was not something that developed until I was ready to go back to grad school.
So what is the thing about, I mean, I guess what it is for you, it seems like zombies represent something bigger, like a big metaphor for something larger, like our fears. And we'll talk about this later, I even like how you talk about how zombies are also a reflection of ideas and the way we embrace new things or not.
Right. Well, when I was getting ready to go study for a PhD, I knew I wanted to do cultural studies generally in the realm of English, but my passion was studying film and adaptations and things like that. And this was about 2003, 2004, when we just started to see zombie movies coming back into vogue. And frankly, we saw the first really big budget Hollywood films. And so one of the things that I've always looked for as a scholar is to try to make the connections between popularity and relevance. Generally speaking, if something is popular, there should be some reason behind it. And sometimes it's just, you know, escapist entertainment or something less sophisticated. But with this zombie thing, I really wanted to figure out what was going on, because they do kind of crop up now and then over the course of history. And as you said, they do that for certain reasons, because our pop culture is doing a type of work. And that work is helping us get through stuff and show what we're interested in and why we're drawn to those things. So when I went to the University of Arizona, I said, okay, what I'm going to do while I'm here is figure out why zombies are so popular. And to begin that, I had to figure out where zombies came from.
Yeah. which we're going to break down. First of all, you say in your first book that while most people think of zombie films as mindless entertainment, that the fact is zombie creatures have this uncanny ability to make audiences think while they shriek. Is that one of the things that makes a zombie maybe different from a from another kind of horror creature?
I think so. I think it's because the zombie, more so than the vampire or the werewolf, is really kind of a blank slate. And so I'm playing around with the idea of mindlessness and the zombie's kind of stereotypical love for brains. It is this creature that can be more than one thing. It can be whatever it needs to be. And I think for the right discriminating mind, you can start watching all these movies and all these manifestations and start asking, well, wait a minute. What's going on now? Why is this creature this way? Because the rules for the zombie are so fluid. People can kind of make up whatever zombie they want to support whatever story they're trying to tell or message they're trying to make.
So, one thing that's interesting, too, is how zombies are fundamentally American creatures. And they're creatures that don't actually have a literary origin. That's another thing that I think is really seems really unique about the zombie, and I want to have you talk about that. Let's start, though, with the bigger idea. So zombies are, like, first of all, so they come to be bigger cultural manifestations of all kinds of different fears going on in a culture. But what's the first iteration of a zombie? Fear of death, probably? That seems like that would be the where we got started with the idea of zombies.
Strangely, no. The origin of the zombie is fear of enslavement.
Yeah. It's so much about slavery, isn't it, the zombie?
Yeah. Well, and that's what makes it uniquely American. And by American, I don't mean United States.
Right.
I really mean the kind of Western Hemisphere. And while you can find creatures that have come back from the dead all over the world, which is really a broader term called revenants, mm-hmm. Just any kind of creature that comes back from the dead. What we get with the zombie is creatures that are not allowed to die, but instead have to continue to labor as slaves. And so it makes perfect sense that that's the kind of monster that a pre-slave culture, such as the one in Haiti, would come up with, because generally we design monsters that manifest our greatest fears. And so you see the zombie in Haiti because those are, it's a culture and a people who fear enslavement more than perhaps anything else. And it translates so easily to early 20th century America because in the United States because generally imperialist powers fear enslavement even more than those they enslave.
Mm.
So I think that's where it kind of comes from. Death is maybe preferable to the loss of agency and the loss of choice.
And it starts to shift the idea as we go along, which we'll get to. So this, so what's interesting too is how the idea of a zombie is zombie-like. Like it mutates and transforms. And what's so interesting is when this idea of a zombie manifests itself in Haiti, for example, and this seems like to be the kind of the epicenter for all of this, it mixes with Christianity and it becomes, it starts to take on another kind of manifestation. Talk about that part.
Well, that's what really fascinated me because I was trying to figure out this idea of origin, which is always so slippery in cultural studies. So I'm trying to figure out this specific term zombie. Where did it really come from? And there is a term zombie from Africa in the Congo, really. And the idea is that the zombie is a, kind of more of a spirit that's trapped in this world and can't pass on to the afterlife. So in a lot of ways, early zombie traditions are more just like our ghosts. But when you get that culture translated through enslavement and through the slave trade with an intersection in with specifically Catholicism, you suddenly get the worship of saints and the worship of people who have passed on. And then you get this concept of the resurrection, which is the bodies coming out of the grave, literally coming from the tomb. And so somehow that attempt to fuse African folk belief with Catholicism kind of created what we are more readily associate with the voodoo religion today. And we got this sense of the body being stuck instead of the spirit. So having the body be stuck in this life, not able to move on, and really subjected to the whims of someone else.
This was my favorite part of your book, this part I'm going to ask you about. And that is, as you write in the book, the thing that makes zombies so interesting is that they are, as you say, in a certain sense, real, or at least were real by the practitioners of the voodoo religion. Explain this idea that there actually kind of were zombies.
Yeah, it is really crazy once I started digging around into it. The first person who really made an account of it was W.B. Seabrook, right, who wrote this book, The Magic Island, in 1929. And it's kind of sensational and not super credible. But Zora Neale Hurston wrote about zombies years later, and she was a bona fide ethnographer. And her book, Tell My Horse, actually has a photograph of a zombie woman that she met. And then Wade Davis, the Harvard ethnobotanist, went down to Haiti in the 80s to try to figure out what exactly is going on. And one of the things that gave credence to all these investigations is the Haitian penal code has specific laws against raising zombies. And you kind of think there, if there's a law, there must be a precedent. There must be a reason that law is there.
Right.
Now, of course, the real zombie isn't the dead brought back to life, because we haven't figured out how to reanimate dead tissue yet. I do say yet there. But there is this sense of the original real zombies are basically lobotomized.
Yeah.
So they would certain Bokors, which are kind of renegade voodoo practitioners, would use tetrodotoxin from local pufferfish and maybe some poison from frogs and different herbs and create what they called the coupe poudre, this kind of white powder that would render its victim, for all intents and purposes, dead.
Yeah.
And they would look dead, and they wouldn't have a pulse, and they wouldn't breathe. And so being a tropical country, these people would be buried almost instantly. And then in the night, the folks would come and dig them up. And by that point, the poor victim has suffered substantial brain damage from loss of oxygen and the poisoning itself, and basically lost all their upper-level brain capacity so they could be sold on a different part of the island to simply work in the sugarcane fields forever. And this is a thing that happened. It happened with enough regularity that there was the law and there were records of it. And there's numerous stories of family members being dead and then found on another part of the island 20 years later. And to me, that's super terrifying, the idea that this could be a fate that someone could face.
And that was the initial fear. I mean, these days we think about, although this is, it's evolving and we'll talk about that, but a lot of people, when they think about zombies, they're terrified of being attacked by the zombie horde.
Right.
But the fear then was, I don't want to become a zombie myself.
Exactly.
And that seems important, that distinction.
Yeah, super different. The idea was that the Bokor was the person to fear. You didn't want to make the wrong enemies because you didn't want to wake up in a coffin. Obviously, and it's because of that total loss of agency and the idea of being plunged into this netherworld of enslavement for the rest of your days. I mean, it's a similar, there's so many parallels you can draw today with fear of brain death or fear of Alzheimer's, or the reason we have do not resuscitate orders. I mean, all these things are associated with the same type of fear. We either want to be alive or dead. We don't really want to be stuck somewhere in between.
Yeah, and that's what a zombie is, that they're alive, but they're not there.
Right.
Yeah. So you have this kind of taxonomy in the book where you break down these different types. And this is the first one. This is type number one, the real zombie, as you talked about. How do we get to the second type? And this is the I think this is the white zombie.
Yeah, we get to the second type mostly because of Seabrook, because he brings these accounts back to the United States. And almost immediately, there's a play that's put on that's kind of based on his accounts. But there's also, in the 30s, at Universal Studios and stuff, this great interest in horror films,
right,
particularly gothic horror films, and particularly adaptations. So we have Dracula and Frankenstein coming out right at the first of the 30s. But there was a desire to find more monsters and to find lesser known monsters. And I think to find something a little bit more local that wasn't just adapting the monsters of the old world. And so Victor Halperin, a great producer over in Hollywood, he comes up with this film, White Zombie, which is basically about Seabrook's version of what was going on in Haiti, which is the idea that if you go to Haiti, you could turn into a zombie, and that's not good, especially when it's your girlfriend.
Right.
So White Zombie is the first real zombie movie. The zombies are servants, they're slaves, they're not monsters in the fact that they attack people. Instead, it's really a movie about the fear of miscegenation and the fear that a white woman could be enslaved by a person of color and forced into this kind of horrible existence. And that's kind of the first real phase we get, is this manifestation of white people being enslaved by black people, which again is the great fear of the imperialist, especially an imperialist that has a historical tradition of slavery.
So that's a manifestation of this sort of racist fear that we have at that part of the century. The fear of communism comes into play here. I mean, that creates another variant of the zombie, that what I'm calling type number three, the commie zombie. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. The commie zombie is pretty great. And in the Cold War era, particularly in the 50s, that kind of zombie is kind of loses its roots with Haiti, and it becomes a little bit more sci-fi. So you get Invisible Invaders, you get Plan 9 from Outer Space, you get this idea that aliens are going to destroy us with our own people. They're going to turn our own dead into an army that will attack us. And this is really an outlandish manifestation of the fear of communism, but it makes sense. It's the idea that there's an ideology so insidious that even your best friends and family can turn against you. You could read Invasion of the Body Snatchers as a zombie movie in that regard.
Totally.
The idea of being people losing their agency and being converted for this insidious cause, which is pretty much describes McCarthyism. That's the fear that we were laboring under in the 50s.
What are the movies to look for? I mean, I guess, do you have a list of like the best movies you like for these different types?
I actually don't, because my preference is so fluid.
Yeah.
It really changes in what I'm looking for. The truth is that a lot of the pre-1968 zombie films are not great.
That's true.
The best voodoo zombie film out there, lowercase v, is I Walked with a Zombie. That has some actual production value, and it's an interesting story. It's actually an adaptation of Jane Eyre.
Right.
But it comes from Jacques Tourneur, a great filmmaker. It's from 1943. So that's probably the best example of this thing that I'm talking about. Invisible Invaders, like I said, is sci-fi. It's pretty good. It's not super high quality. It's pretty low budget. And then we get a film called The Plague of the Zombies from 1966.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the last callbacks to the voodoo origins. It's a Hammer film, so it does have a little bit of a cheese factor, but it's cool special effects, and it's all about using zombie laborers to mine for silver. It's quite silly, but that's one of the films that really establishes the look of the dead coming out of the grave and the decomposing faces, because the earlier films, they're not so overtly decomposing.
Yeah.
So that brings a little bit more into the stuff that would pave the way for George Romero.
Well, George Romero, this is the crucial moment. And people who don't know, the uninitiated who aren't familiar with Night of the Living Dead, he creates that film in 1968. And I guess this is the game changer when we're talking about zombies, right?
Absolutely. Romero changed everything. And it's so wonderful because he wasn't even trying to. He was a film student back in Pennsylvania. He was trying to make a low-budget adaptation of Richard Matheson's novel, I Am Legend.
Yeah.
But he didn't want to use traditional vampires. He really liked the idea of the ghoul, which actually comes out of Arabian culture. But he liked the idea of it being contagious. He liked the monster idea. He liked being stuck in a house. So he's drawing from a zombie tradition, but he's drawing from vampire traditions, particularly Last Man on Earth with Vincent Price. He's drawing on The Birds by Hitchcock. He's drawing on Invasion of the Body Snatchers. All these different ideas just kind of come together with his genius, and he makes this very, very simple movie about dead people coming to life and trying to eat the living. Mm-hmm. And that's it. And that changed the map forever.
What? Explain the idea that that now they start to eat people. That was a big deal too. Why does he make them flesh eaters, and why is that important for the way the idea of a zombie spreads?
Well, the flesh eating does come out of the ghoul tradition, yep. And Night of the Living Dead actually never says the word zombie once. They do say ghoul, and I think it was partially just to up the stakes from vampires. So vampires drink blood, well, his ghouls are going to eat flesh.
Yep.
And part of it is also reaction to Vietnam and the idea of dismemberment and just this horrible bodily mutilation that we were subject to as a country, seeing on the news. And it really just upped the game. There's also, it's not coincidental that this takes place right at the end of the Hays Code, but before the MPAA system's really in place. So he can push the envelope of propriety and good taste. And it was also cheap. He would go to the butcher shop and just get a bunch of offal and bring it to set and have people chew on it. And it's just all that kind of stuff comes together to make something no one's ever seen before. But it does establish one of the primary metaphors for the zombie, which is consumption. This idea of hollow, empty consumption. The modern era is about trying to fill a void and never being able to satisfy that. And that's one of the things that I find super interesting that is continues to be relevant today.
The idea of this film coming of age at a time when there was basically a televised war going on, Vietnam. You referenced that. Say a little bit more about that, because that seems important. I mean, Americans for the first time were dealing with pretty graphic images of war, and I guess this must have plugged into the way this film kind of took off and became really popular, do you think?
Yeah, it's the first of a wave of super ultra-violent films that would characterize most of the 70s. Because both Night of the Living Dead comes out in 68, but so does Rosemary's Baby, which is really shocking for other reasons. And it is this sense of the zombie as a manifestation of fear of death, this idea that, oh my gosh, we are mortal, we are susceptible to horrible violence. And so much of why we watch films or read books or go to plays is this idea of catharsis. You have an emotion that you can't deal with healthily, so you deal with it through fiction, and you come to terms with the things that are most upsetting you. And so surely in 68, people were particularly worried about being injured, being killed, being mutilated, and the war just continually reinforced that and kept that fear or that idea in the forefront. And so this idea that we're off fighting this threat abroad, but the fear is that that kind of a threat could come home. And so the movie literally becomes about the siege of a home, of a rural farmhouse in the middle of nowhere where America should be safe. And we see the American family literally ripped apart and literally eaten by this uncontrollable, contagious, infectious menace, which, again, it's partially communism, but it's more than that. It's any ideology that undermines whatever we think is the correct way of life.
It's us versus them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that seems like an important sort of part about this era. Zombies are them. But they don't always become them. It seems like we'll get to a more sympathetic zombie when we get back from a break because it really evolves, this creature. Kyle Bishop is with us. He teaches English at Southern Utah University. He's the author of American Zombie Gothic, and his new book is called How Zombies Conquered Popular Culture. He's joining us from the from his office in Cedar City where he teaches there at Southern Utah University. We need to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West. And okay, here we are. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now with scholar Kyle Bishop. We are talking about zombies, sort of his area of expertise. He's an associate professor of English at Southern Utah University. He's joining us from his office today in Cedar City. We've been talking about the origins of the idea of zombies, and also, and he's been writing about this a lot lately, that there's a new kind of zombie renaissance where the undead populate not just film and not just television, but you have fun runs and toys and all kinds of things. His new book is called How Zombies Conquered Popular Culture. All right, so we were talking about George Romero and Night of the Living Dead, and that was a game changer, as we were saying. One thing that is interesting is this: with Romero zombies, you start to get these rules about, and zombies in, it seems like they, even today, they have to live up, they have to sort of live up to these rules. Go through some of these rules. I mean, if you're bitten, you become one. That's a rule, right? That turns you into a zombie.
Yeah, we do have these rules with some wonderful variations. The great thing is Romero wasn't trying to set rules, but so many people latched onto what he was doing because it was so unique and different.
Yeah,
that you do see this propagation of the rules. So the idea is, yes, if you get bitten, you get infected and you become a zombie. Sometimes the bite kills you, sometimes it doesn't, sometimes you become a zombie later. It's all whatever. But the essential element is there. Bite results in conversion, which makes it such a great figure of brainwashing, of infestation, mm-hmm. of infection, of pathogen. I mean, all that stuff really works on every level. How you dispatch a zombie, it varies, but it's generally you destroy the brain,
yeah.
which is delightfully ironic because
right.
this is a creature that is brainless.
Yeah.
You don't have to do anything really complicated like get a wooden stake or a silver bullet. You can destroy the brain stem, whatever. But that also varies from manifestation to manifestation. Some zombies eat anything. Some zombies only eat brains,
mm-hmm.
But they're generally perceived as somewhat cannibalistic, although I've always struggled with that. If a zombie's eating a human, is that really cannibalism? Because they don't eat each other. But there is that sense of consuming flesh.
Yeah. Like World War Z, and we'll come back to that, but World War Z, I have to say, that was interesting because the zombies in that version only would bite or consume healthy humans.
Right. And that's such a wonderful way to vary it, the idea that zombie is a pathogen that is primarily invested in replication.
Yeah.
And so they don't want to try to infect a diseased body, and they certainly don't want to inhibit each other. And so you start seeing more of those sophisticated zombie manifestations,
yeah. Yeah.
I guess, where it becomes a selective plague. But that is the idea of replication, of procreation, and it's done through various means.
So Romero, his first zombies they really get at our fears about war and invasion and what invasion might do to our families, those kinds of things. But then 1978 comes and he makes Dawn of the Dead, and then everything changes again. And it seems like your sense of it is Dawn of the Dead represents something even more important because it becomes less about our fears of war and to more kind of contemporary concerns like, and this is the thing that was so interesting to me, is our fear of, because they shift from a rural backwood, like that's where the zombies come, to shopping malls. And now it
yeah.
becomes what? Our concern for contemporary, like we don't want to become these mindless zombie consumers, I guess.
Right. And of course, the point is it's too late.
Yeah.
That's what is so great with that film. And you asked me about my rankings, and I will say that Dawn of the Dead from 78 is hands down my favorite zombie film. I think that's really a pinnacle of the 20th century manifestation because it kind of in a weird way goes back to the Haitian origin because the idea is that we all are potentially zombies and we already are zombies.
Yeah.
And so Romero was so genius to set that up where the zombies come to the shopping mall because they have this kind of deep-seated instinct that tells them if you want to consume, if you're hungry, if you need something, go to the mall.
Right.
And so you get these monsters lined up outside, pressed up against the glass, scratching against the doors, clamoring to get in. And it looks exactly like Black Friday. It looks just like a bunch of consumers trying to get the latest game or the latest toy. And so Romero did something really genius there. But the point is, he didn't have to try very hard. We've kind of, as a society, we'd already set him up for it.
Yeah.
And so the great line from Dawn of the Dead is, they're us. They are us. It's just the worst possible manifestation of the consumptive, mindless creatures we've already become, thanks to the post-war era consumerism.
Yeah. And it's interesting, then the monster zombie era kind of goes into this decline, goes into this kind of remission for a while. I think it's a good word, actually. And it shifts, you talk about, from serious, meaningful creature, you know, making commentary about consumerism and economic instability, to something not so serious. Like, I mean, everyone thinks about Michael Jackson's Thriller. Jackson's Thriller comes during this time, and it kind of becomes a joke for a while.
Right. And that's true kind of across the board. The 70s was such a great decade for horror and such great monsters across the spectrum, because monsters are born from war and economic hardship and political unrest and disease. And by 82, 83, it was the Reagan era, and we were great and everything was wonderful and nobody was scared of anything. I'm obviously being reductive, but that's how you kind of get the art. And so suddenly all the horror films started to become parodies. They started to become horror comedies. We started seeing a rebirth of the romantic comedy and the screwball comedy.
Right.
And so one of the last gasps of serious zombie film was Romero's Day of the Dead, which is such a great commentary on Cold War fear and paranoia and the military establishment. And it's a really pretty great movie. It's also his most violent, if you're into that. But the same year, his co-writer for Night of the Living Dead, Dan O'Bannon, came out with Return of the Living Dead, which is pretty comedic. It's about zombies that eat brains, and they talk, and they crack jokes, and they call for paramedics. It's really a funny, irreverent film, and that movie was super popular, and Day of the Dead wasn't. And so the zeitgeist, or whatever you want to call it, said, you know what, we're sick of real monsters. We've been dealing with that for over a decade. We want funny. We want silly. And so then you get stuff like I Was a Teenage Zombie and really pretty lowbrow comedic takes. And that would dominate for the film industry, at least, for almost 20 years.
And then 2002 comes, and the real legit zombie returns. Danny Boyle's film, 28 Days Later. This is another game changer we should talk about, I guess.
Huge game changer for a couple of reasons. First off, a lot of people do not acknowledge it's a zombie movie because the infected are living. But for me, I have some pretty simple criteria for what constitutes a zombie, and it's basically infection and mindlessness, loss of agency. And so 28 Days Later, to me, is a zombie movie. And I think Boyle was definitely drawing on some of those inspirations. But what he did is he brought us a new monster for a new millennium, a new generation.
A year after 9/11, too.
After 9/11. Yeah, granted, he was already in production when 9/11 hit, but it certainly helped resonate with the audience, because here is this idea of a catastrophic attack on a major city, tremendous loss of life. And what he does is he now has a realistic zombie plague. So rather than being a horror movie, it's more of a science fiction film. And it's this idea that, oh, wait, you could be infected by an agent that would make you mindless or crazy. And his zombies are super ferocious. They're super fast. Mm-hmm. They are alive. They can turn you into one of theirs with just a drop of blood. And so you start seeing all these kind of new fears, fear of infection, particularly AIDS, fear of loss of control, fear of death, again, very resonant in a post-9/11 world, and a higher octane type of experience at the movies. Mm. And so he really did he gave zombies what they needed, which was this kind of boost, this adrenaline boost that audiences just, if you'll pardon me,
eat it up.
I couldn't help but go there.
You have to. Well, so we shift into the fourth type in your taxonomy of zombies that emerges is the sympathetic monster, the protagonist. So Anne Rice does the same thing with vampires. She makes them human and makes them talk and real. And I guess this is the fourth type for the zombie, the hero zombie sort of.
Yeah. Well, anything that – once we get something that's really, really popular, we want to cheer for it. We want to root for it. And it's similarly, one of the ways you overcome your fears is you embrace them. You make them part of who you are. So it's a kind of a natural development that we would want to sympathize with the zombie now. We start feeling bad for the zombie. And frankly, hints of that were in Romero from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of the zombie as a tragic figure or a zombie that was a victim, and zombies, you can't blame zombies. They're just being who they are. But to really make a zombie sympathetic, you've got to give it emotions. You've got to give it feelings. And unfortunately, that means you often have to give it speech. And I struggle with that a little bit. Because I think once you give the zombie its power of speech back, then you've violated one
of the
fundamental rules.
Yeah.
Which, and then you have something that's a little bit more akin to a vampire, or maybe a kind of a manifested ghost. But there, it does work on some levels. I think Shaun of the Dead, one of the great comedies of our era.
That's my
in
favorite
any genre. Yeah, I mean it makes Ed the zombie quite sympathetic at the end. The film Fido is a brilliant zombie comedy that it has some biting social commentary. See, I did it again. I can't not pun. But Fido does it through acting and facial expression and sympathetic grunting. But then you also get Warm Bodies, which is the just all out and out talking, sympathetic, sexy lover based on Romeo and Juliet by way of Twilight.
Yeah.
And it became one of the most successful zombie texts in the history of forever, and that's because we want to love them. We want it. We want to see these decaying, gross monsters as lovable because they are us. They are inevitably us. So why not embrace them?
You were quoted in Wired magazine a couple of years ago saying something that I wanted to ask you about because I think this is really interesting. You said, traditionally speaking, the zombie narrative's whole point is that an individual cannot survive. It has to be a group. It has to be a collective.
Yeah.
And even then, odds are they're going to die. Would you talk about that? The idea that they aren't about just one lone, although there are exceptions, but there generally isn't just one lone hero. This is about the collective.
Well, it's the collective on both sides,
right,
which is so interesting because an individual zombie is nothing. It's easy to get rid of one zombie. I mean, you can run away or you can hit it with a brick. Zombies are only effective in a group, and they really do function in a hive mind capacity. And there are certain narratives that have explored the allure of that. And I think that's what zombie walks are all about. You want to be part of the group. You want to join. You want to belong. But to survive as a human, you also have to have community. You can't be a lone survivor with any kind of effectiveness. The loner is always going to die at the end of these narratives. It's about rebuilding community and reestablishing a sense of who we are as a collective. And so you see that in these long arc narratives, such as The Walking Dead, where you have a community of zombies versus a community of humans. And what makes that story so cool is there's also another community of humans that wants to kill your community of humans while the zombies are trying to kill both communities.
It's wild.
So it's all about togetherness in a weird kind of way.
Yeah. And that sort of that idea of the fifth type, this is so interesting, is this idea that people experiencing – this is how you put it in your book – that experiencing a zombie holocaust vicariously through books and movies or TV, that's not enough. We've shifted into this sort of fifth type where people, they want to, I guess, kind of be the zombie or at least live in fear of the zombie firsthand, right?
Right. And it's so beautiful on so many levels. You love the zombie so much you want to be the zombie. But what that is you fear death so much that you become a zombie to overcome it. In a strange way, it's like the Day of the Dead rituals in South America. Because you're afraid of dying, you dress up and paint yourself as a skeleton so you can say, look, I know I'm going to die and I'm cool with it. Let's have a big party and a parade. Well, the zombie's doing the same thing. I'm going to prove that I've overcome this fear by dressing up as a corpse and putting on makeup and blood and trying to be as inventive as possible and then go shuffle down the road as a way to celebrate the life that I actually have. And so in many ways, it's kind of the culmination of this whole arc we've been talking about, which is to go from fear to no longer afraid, to really owning it and triumphing on it and taking back death and making it part of who we are in life.
So is that where we are these days then, is with something, you know, because in the past, if you think about Romero's images of zombies and, well, anyway, a lot of them, they were about hopelessness at the end because the zombie was always going to, I mean, I'm thinking about the, like even Invasion of the Body Snatchers, you know, like the very end scene with Donald Sutherland. It's not a great movie. In fact, it's kind of crappy, but it's pretty scary because you realize, oh, we can't get out of here. We're not going to make it. It's totally hopeless. Is that the shift now, that there is a more hopeful ending in the scenario?
That's the shift. It's got to be the shift. Otherwise, you can only enjoy a cynical narrative for so long.
Right.
And so we're starting to see, particularly in literature, by the way, because zombie literature has finally caught up with the films, and we're seeing narratives that have a hopeful resolution, where zombieism is curable, or where zombie humans learn to coexist, or there's a zombie-human hybrid that's going to change the face of the world. And we're starting to see that. And what drives The Walking Dead, I think, among the fan base is this hope that Rick's going to pull it off, that he's going to find a place where he can live in safety, where they can rebuild society. But they're always going to have that cautionary tale element, which is, yeah, there's hope, but you got to watch out for it. And you've got to work really hard to obtain it. And there's the risk that you're going to lose it. But it's got to be hopeful. Otherwise, what are we doing?
Yeah. We don't have a lot of time left, but I wanted to come back around to an idea that you've been talking about. And this is a kind of a bigger metaphor for zombies, the idea that ideas are like zombies in the sense that they spread. And this is something I think that you really have sort of hit on, this idea that ideas can be viral, and there's always those people who resist, but... But would you talk a little bit about, like, because I really liked this idea that we're going to all have to become zombies to sort of make it in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's the infection, and the contagion is something that spreads. And the thing that spreads most is things that are most successful, things that are that kind of, again, going back to the pun I make off of adaptation. Zombies have to adapt to survive. We have to adapt to survive. Ideas have to adapt to survive. And so when you get something that is popular enough to thrive and to be passed on from one to another, there's some indication that there's some good there. There's some it's something worth investigating because it's got some traction. It's got the ability to make it. And so I think our best ideas are zombie ideas. They're ideas that are passed from one to the next, getting stronger as it goes through variations. And that's kind of who... what we should all kind of strive for in a society is finding those things that make us better. And ironically, I guess that means zombieism is our future.
That's Kyle Bishop. Teaches English at Southern Utah University. He's the author of American Zombie Gothic. That's his first book. His new one, though, is How Zombies Conquered Popular Culture. He joined us from his office in Cedar City. Professor Bishop, thank you very much for being with us.
It was a real honor to talk to you today, Doug.
Radio West is a production of KUER News. Our thanks to Susan Anderson. The show is directed by Tim Slover. Video West, produced by Josh Weathers. Radio West, produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.